right? Griffin Corp. And what's happening in Dublin? Nothing. Don't give it. They don't give a shite about it down here.
Focus on the game. Don't hide behind your cars or your tattoos or your girlfriends or your agents. Play the game.
Be careful the cat. No say the cat is in the sack when you have not the cat in the sack.
The great football, the Liam Brady's, the Ronnie Whelan's, the David O'Leary's. This is a great football and country produced players and go out and play that rubbish. Yeah.
This week we got to go up to the Big Smoke to see an old coach of mine, Stephen McPhail. Came across as usual, like I always thought, as a really good guy, and he was an excellent player. He was in that Leeds team that was very successful. To be in any team that reaches the Champions League semi-finals, you've got to be a good player. Like, so yeah, for such a great career the guy's had, like, such a humble man, and especially the issues he's had to deal with off the pitch as well, just a testament to the guy and his character and everything like that, and probably giving him a different outlook on life, even speaking to him that way, and he appreciates things a lot more. And I'm sure cancer affects everyone, so it's getting a bit deep here, but listen, a lot of people relate to this, and we'll see how strong a person he is, and if they're going through rough times, can see that there's light at the end of the tunnel. I'm here with Stephen McPhail, and Larry will be doing sound for our podcast today. We'll be looking back on Stephen's career and the ups and downs. Obviously, Mac, I know you well from our Rovers day. Probably regret signing me at this stage. Like, wasted a bit of money on me. But I suppose, Mac, when I look back on you, I know you from watching you when I was younger. And for me, it was a bit surreal actually meeting you at the time. And I must say, first of all, for anyone that doesn't know Stephen, never met you, possibly one of the nicest guys I've ever met. I remember even after during the cup final for me, just coming up and like condoling me basically before, but it meant a lot. But looking back, you started off at Leeds, you went over at 16, was it?
Like 15, yeah, 15. So yeah, it's a long time ago, 95. So probably now, looking back, it's probably too young to leave home, but yeah, 15, so.
What would you say then would be a good age to go over? If you think you're 15, why were you too young then?
I just think back then, I think it was the norm. I think now it's obviously you can't go 15 now. So it's I don't know, I think it's just mentally and physically probably not ready for it at the time. But obviously leaving your family, all that sort of stuff is the most difficult part. But it worked out for me. So listen, I settled in really, really well. I probably had a tough 6 months at the start where you're in your room and you're crying and you're missing home, and we didn't have mobile phones back then, so it was literally half an hour on the phone every night on a pay phone in the digs. It was difficult that way, but after the first 6 months a year, I just grew and felt confident that was the right move, really.
Do you not think, though, like, you know, when I went over, no, I was 24. That's too old, I think.
Yeah.
Like, when I went over, it was a totally different environment for, like, you look at the 16-year-olds, they're in around the first team all the time. And then people are saying, oh, you're better off being League of Ireland there and staying and growing senior. But when you go over, it's a totally different environment, like, total different mentality. And I think it's a lot more cutthroat. I think lads are looking out for themselves on day one, where I think Irish players kind of, like, stick together and we'll always kind of look after each other. So do you not think, like, sometimes you go over 15 but you learn quicker, you're ready then for when you do go into the first team, where I think you're older, you're naive, thinking like everyone's on your side, they're not, like.
I think it's probably a catch, isn't it? It's trying to get the balance, because I probably had the character to deal with a few bits like that, as you said, there's loads of bullying going on, isn't it, without you knowing, in the dressing room. And but then again, I'd say 8 out of 10 kids just aren't ready for that at that age. So it's difficult. Can you say there's a perfect time to go? There's not, because it's got to be individualised, I think. And I'd be different to you. And I think that's the way it is. I think it's all to do with the character of the kid, and can they get into, as you said, absolute rootless business in England, Scotland, wherever you go over there. It's everyone's looking over their shoulder all the time, and I felt like that. I was there for 20 odd years, and I always felt there was someone coming to get me every day I walked in the dressing room. And every day I turned up at training, I felt like I had to be the best every day I turned up. So bit different back here, but it's just not worked out for me. 15 to go, leave your mum and dad, leave your my girlfriend, who's my wife now at the time. Heartbreaking, but it worked out okay in the end.
You go over and you've George Graham first. It gives you your debut, and obviously he's known for his Arsenal style. And watching you as a player, he like labels you the next Liam Brady. Like, that is pressure straight away. But his Arsenal teams, would they, like the way he played, were you surprised that he gave you his debut? Because he was more defensive minded coach, and I see you as a flair player, I would have said, at the time when you broke in. Everyone was saying flair.
Yeah, see, George for me was unbelievable. Like, I was probably just turned 16 and I was trying him. He used to call me over and train with the first team, and he would always say that I love the left foot, love this. He was such a great character, but he nailed me in how I had to defend. Like, he got me out in the afternoons, put me through all sorts of defensive drills, and made me realise I just couldn't turn up and be naturally getting the ball and start things off and think that was the game. He was brilliant for me. He gave me a whole probably 6 months of drilling me defensively and made me understand how I had to work off the ball and how I had to defend as well as get on the ball. So for him to give me my debut was, as you said, it was probably against the way his team played. People would have seen me, as you said, as someone who likes to get on the football and start things off and make things happen. But I was so comfortable because we had such a good sort of relationship off the pitch, and I knew he was hard on me for the right reasons. And so to get my debut at Leicester at that time was amazing, you know.
So you was kind of like cruel to be kind to you.
Exactly, yeah. When I look back, like, at the time I was thinking, he's slaughtering me here, there's no way I'm going to play. Like, but it was obviously trying to get me in the mindset.
Do you think, I was speaking about this to Larry on the way up, we were speaking about a certain player, and I won't name him, but he said, when you're in training, you should take it as a compliment that people are actually giving out about you because they feel you can do better.
Yeah.
Where some lads know don't want to be given out that. So, like, basically they're saying, he actually said it's a compliment because if I'm not giving out to you, I expect you to be that bad.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you get that balance, though, as well as the hard thing, isn't it? It's because definitely. I'm a player myself. I don't like managers giving out to me, but they're doing it because they believe you obviously can.
Yeah, I think it's the way you do it. I think it's having, as you said, the balance of making sure the player feels that you trust them. But there's so much more in players I see when I go up to training every day. I'm thinking, come on, you're going through the motions here. So that's flip side for me, being on the training ground at the moment from being a player. I can see what they were trying to do back then. Like, I had Paul Art and Eddie Gray as a youth team, and they were unbelievable. They just rubbed off each other. Great. Paul was so disciplined and made sure he was on you for everything. Any of jobs we had to do around the training ground, if we weren't done, he'd slaughter you. And then Eddie would put his arm around you and on the football pitch and say, go out and do what you do. So I think I moulded as a kid in that 15, 16, 17 age bracket of turning from schoolboy football into men's football. So it's so important you have the right environment, the right characters, the right coaches, managers at that stage to hopefully set everything in stone for you going forward.
Like, George Graham, no. You hear stories about his Arsenal sides, and they had good bonding sessions, with the word I'd use. Did he have that at Leeds? Did he bring that kind of culture into Leeds, where he was like, hear about the Arsenal players saying when Wenger came in, he totally changed it, the drink went out the window. Did he have a Tuesday club? No.
Yeah, like, we always had Saturday, Tuesday clubs at Leeds.
Twice a week.
Yeah. It's just the way it was. I think so many characters, like, in the squad. When I look back, there was, when I first went over and got in the reserve team, I played the reserve game when I was 15, and I had Ian Rush, Carlton Palmer, Thomas Brolin, all these players in the reserves, Leeds were trying to get rid of them at the time, Lee Sharp. So I was always around proper professionals and men, so you do get swept up in that. And back then, that was the culture of going out and having a team spirit, and everyone was out. You don't get away with it if you don't. I was obviously very young, so I didn't go out till I was 17, 18, when I was in the first team squad on a regular basis. But unbelievable, yeah, just you learn quite quick.
Would you be left behind if you didn't go out?
You just feel like you were letting people down, and that's, you don't want to be letting people down when you're a young kid. It's we probably went out far too much when you look back, but they were the days, and now it's totally different.
Yeah, but you enjoyed it.
We enjoyed it.
But like then, like how do you manage to get in training the next day? Like, would it just be like in your system? If I went drinking now on a Saturday, went out on a Monday, I went training on a Monday, I'd be terrible. No way.
But to be fair, we'd have Wednesday usually off. So we'd have Wednesday off during the week because we play on a Saturday. So, that was when you do it Saturday after a game. We'd always nearly go out all together. Wherever we were, if we got back late, we'd go out together from the couch. And I think it was just the spirit we had at that club was I think when you're at a club like that, you feel like everyone hates you, so you just need to be
dirty leads, like,
and that's it's a sort of siege mentality, and the bond we had as a group was unbelievable. Even later, when I was 18, 19, and around the first team squad regularly, some of the characters we had were unbelievable. Jason Wilcox, David Batty, all these people are just really funny characters, you know.
Did they ever like take you under their wing on a Tuesday, you know, when you're out going, you have to come home drinking with me? Like?
Yeah, it wasn't so much out drinking, it was more just having the crack around the training ground. It'd be very, very witty, very funny. Gary Kelly was unbelievable to me. He was probably 4 or 5 years ahead of me. He was someone I always wanted to be because watching him in the 94 World Cup, Irish from Drogheda, just down the road from where I'm from. And then all of a sudden, I'm sharing a room with him in the first team squad. It was surreal, really. He looked after all the Irish boys. Ian Hart was there as well. He was a bit older. They just made us feel comfortable, made us feel part of the squad, made us feel, when I went down the pitch, get your chest out and do what you do. They just made you feel comfortable around the place.
George Graham leaves, Dave O'Leary comes in, what changed?
Dave probably came in and threw nearly all my youth team into the first team. It was unbelievable, overnight, you know, it was...
Did you think that was forced upon him with the club? You know, sometimes clubs actually go, you need to get some new lads in here.
I think there was pressure from the local press because we had a group that won the FAU Cup, we won the league at Christmas every year. We were flying. I don't think we ever drew a game. It was just one of them squads that was strong throughout. And Harry Keogh was the first one to break through, and he just set the place alight. So
it was a joke.
He was an absolute joke. And so H got in out of our first one out of our digs to get in, and then I was like, we need more. And then
any jealousy then?
Oh yeah, I used to wait up for him. Yeah, I remember waiting up for him. I shared a room with him, and I used to wait up for him when he got back from playing Chelsea or Man U, and just sitting at the end of the bed waiting for him to chat to him what it was like. So it was. He was the first one in, and then, lucky enough, within 12 months, there was probably 6 or 7 of us that made our debuts, and then we felt that we were in around the squad. But Dave was the one who made that happen, really.
Do you ever feel, though, at the time then, as a young lad, that some of the senior players probably were like, hold on a sec, these fellas are coming in, and they mightn't have helped you as much as they could, they're coming in to take our spot? Because I would know as a senior player, I know it's happened. Like, when you see a lot of young lads coming in, you go, there's a change of environment here, we're going to be shifted out the door. You know, that kind of way.
I remember getting smashed around the training by all the boys. David Batty used to just do it as a normal occasion, but you know, he was letting you know that he was the man, and we all knew he was. But I think as soon as you got across the white line in training, we just we probably were quite a cocky bunch together, like, you know, as a youth team. We probably just fancied that we could play, and we enjoyed being around each other because we lived with each other. We used to live in the training ground, so we all, 20 odd of us, living in the same digs every day, so we probably went around as a bit of a mob anyway. So it was, when we got in the first team, we sort of felt like we're together, like, still
was
together.
Was it a click, do you think, that there was a click in the dressing room there?
I just think we were really, really tight, like, you know, really. Harry was come from Australia. You had, as you said, Woodgate, who was from Middlesbrough down the road, but he came and lived with us. So we were all just under the one roof. Only probably Alan Smith, who lived in Leeds, he was the only one that could come in from home every day. But we were just so tight. Everything we done together, like the whole squad. It was never you felt on your own at all during my time at Leeds, which made the success really early, really quick, and really rapid, because we were competing to win the Premier League within a year of getting into it, really, you know.
So much times you thought Leeds were going to do it, and they never did. Yeah. Like, is there a reason? Like, I mean, you'd some great runs in Europe. I mean, the semi-final of the UEFA Cup, then the next year the semi-final of the Champions League, but it just never got over that finish. Why is that? Like, like you said, you had a lot of young players and a lot of good players. Like, I mean, you brought in like the likes of Foden and Denon, and it started to kick into a new level, and you think they're eventually going to do something. But what was it?
I just
kept you back.
I just think the two teams we were up against, Man United and Arsenal, were incredible teams, probably the best in the Premier history. Like, you know, so it was difficult to get over the line. I remember we went top of the league in December, and whatever it was, whoever was top of the league in New Year's Day was always winning the league, and we done it, and we were thinking, right, this is us. And then probably the pressure just of trying to get over the line and trying to keep that right up to the debt. And you know what it's like over there at Christmas time, the games just come every day, and we were rolling, we beat Chelsea away. Remember thinking, this is us, we're going to do it this year. And then we'd have a big game against Man United away and get beat 2-1. And Arsenal would come to Ellen Road and beat us. And there were just big moments that we just couldn't get over the line with. That's the difference.
What kind of stuff would they be saying? Because as a manager, if you can't get over the line, you got to look to him then. You got to say, you got to be, what do we do here? Because it's not working. Like.
Yeah, it's difficult because he made a... It really happened overnight. George Graham came to save the club from relegation. So within a year, we were challenging. I think we finished in the 5 years. I think we finished in the top three in the 5 years, or top four in 5 years. So it was incredible. Swift change around. So the mindset, we probably just got, people got carried away, like, as well. Like, this is going to happen every year. And obviously we... The demise then was really quick because we missed out. I think it was Liverpool pipped us by a point, our goal difference, to get that Champions League spot. There was only three up for grabs at that stage. And then it all sort of untangled then. But it was, we just nearly all the time getting there. But that's the difference, isn't it?
Like, you're on about that team togetherness. Like, you all shaved your head.
Yeah.
What, like, who came up with the idea? Surely it was really Ian Hart decided not to shave his head for his wedding.
He was getting wedding, yeah, he got stick for that.
Just bullied him.
Yeah, he got bullied, yeah, he always gets bullied. Fair. I think we were away at Arsenal, and then we were going onto a Champions League game from London then to play on a Tuesday. And we just had so much time on our hands all the time. We were doing that for quite a while, where we had 4 or 5 days together, and someone just got bored, and we all said, just happened in a room one night. Got all the head shaved off, and it was just something that naturally
did
just
did you
happened.
Have to ask permission though?
No, it wasn't.
Did you get in trouble there?
Probably got in trouble, but keep that one quiet. No, it was just part of the group and the bonding, and as you said, being around each other all the time.
You meant the bond with those lads, like, the kind of the word or the impression out there is that O'Leary eventually lost that dressing room. Is that unfair, do you think?
I think probably did to a certain extent. That he changed a lot in the squad, really. As you said, they're bringing in some names and names and names, and probably forgot what a lot of the lads had done from previously. Listen, he was great for me. I don't want to sit here in bad mountain, but he probably lost it quite quick in terms of that, of not respecting what some of the lads done years previous, and just rolled with bigger names, bigger things, just sort of kept coming in the door. But that's the price I think you pay for success, isn't it? It's trying to keep the balance of keeping it real, knowing what sort of dressing room we're in and the characters. To be fair, he always brought good characters in. I can't remember a bad lad we had in the dressing room, but maybe just the whole success.
You're just saying, right, maybe bringing the next level.
Maybe, and that's, I don't know. Listen, I was in the dressing room then. I think probably the older boys were probably better to talk about then, because as a young lad, I'm just thinking about the next game or the next session. So, yeah, probably did upset a few people, but I didn't feel that way in the dressing room, really.
Peter Ridsdale, I've met him a few times. Need to ask you two stories about him. I dealt with him with Preston, and I'd probably believe him. Someone told me about him buying a goldfish for something like $30,000 when it was a very cheap goldfish. Is this true? Like, as I'm thinking...
No, I haven't heard that.
Someone said to me, you know, that a fellow went into his office, told him it's an exotic goldfish, like, I grew well off the mark. And he ended up paying $30,000 for a fish worth about $400 or something. Like, a fish is worth $400 unless you're going to eat it. It's beyond me anyway. it's a joke.
Honestly, I haven't heard that one at all. Obviously, love's gone around about Peter, but I really like Peter. I think he's obviously took a lot.
That's because he gave you a lot of wage.
Yeah, he did. Looked after me everywhere I went. To be fair, now obviously he took a lot of stick, and he was the face for it all. When it sort of collapsed, he stood up and he was the one taking the flak. So, but he done so much good for that club, and obviously now still doing it at Preston. He's obviously a real football man. I spoke to him and we saw Graham Burke and dealt with him then. He was brilliant, absolutely spot on, always honest. And I suppose he just took a lot of flack for
Seth Johnson.
Seth's a good story.
He was in the dressing room with you, wasn't he?
Yeah, I like Seth.
Did that story come out at the time, or was it like, I mean, if I'm a player and I'm going in with a figure in my mind and I'm getting, I know I've read that he didn't actually go in, you're thinking, why wasn't he that lenient when my agent went in? He's obviously learned from the mistakes and come out right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's a club businessman now. I think, listen, Seth was a great character, and he was flying at the time. I played against him at that stage.
And he made his England debut, but then.
Yeah, he just around that time, and he did play for England, and he was probably one of the best midfielders in the country at the time. So when he tells the story, it's funny. I got quite close with Seth over the years, and it is a funny story. But yeah, I think that was probably the club at the time, probably getting a bit caught up and being at the top, but because it happened so quick, felt like we had to act like you're at the top.
It does, though, because you kind of feel you need to be competing against of United going, listen, they're paying this, we can pay it. Like, we have to be showing people that, because obviously players, you talk, you'd ring up your friends and go, it's worth coming here, listen to them, because if someone comes in and offers you terrible money and your friend rings you going, they're ringing me going, don't even bother showing up to the meeting, waste time.
Yeah, see, like, I was totally different. I think today's players different than I was. We never spoke about contracts to each other, ever. I can't remember ever being in a dressing room and listening to, he's on this, he's on that. Just, I don't know if that happens now in the dressing rooms here, but it was just never happened with us, you know.
I heard Dominic Mallier, I was listening to him, and he said he was hearing like Leeds younger players giving out that they weren't earning. Like, one fella, he said, oh, he's on $8,000, and he said, I'd go out and get him. like catch him because he said like he was a young fella claiming he's an 8 grand, never played a game.
Right.
Like, but that's
when I mean it, I was never ever come across it. I never heard anything about that. Like Seth did in years gone on, told the story and
because it's a good story.
Yeah, it's a great story, isn't it? It's one to be told, but it's not a. It was just never like that. It was never, he's on this, so I want that. We were never brought up that way, and never. Dom obviously was an older pro coming into our dressing room from Liverpool or something like that. You might have come across it. A manager might have pulled him in and said, listen, this is happening. Can you sort that out? I don't know the facts of that one. But yeah, that, just the mindset of the club probably changed because, as you said, I think you nailed it, saying we were top up competing with the top two or three every year, so we had to do what they were doing, you know?
Mm. Obviously, you mentioned Eddie Gray was like your youth team manager, and then he was the manager, was there when Leeds got relegated.
Yeah.
Like, you were in that squad. What happened that it literally just went that quick, that it just went all of a sudden challenging for Leeds to go on out? But then it must have hurt you a lot more personally when it was... Obviously, Eddie was the manager at the time as well.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking because we had a season where we were losing everyone. We had to defer our wages, and the year before we were flying. So it was literally overnight. Things were just like with laundry lay. Everything was gone, and it was just heartbreaking because we were there, as you said. Since I was there since I was 15. People that were there for years were letting go, and it's just heartbreaking because they looked after us in our digs because we were all lived in the training ground. So Eddie stepped up as caretaker and had a job that was probably impossible. The morale of the whole club was on its knees, and
do you think lads are just looking to get out?
At that stage,
there's only one way this is going. Like,
yeah, we were told, you know, we were told this is what's happening. We're coming in, firefighting, we need to slash everything. So there was only one way that was going to go in terms of the football and the pitch, because you know yourself, you're in a dressing room or in a club and the environment's not right, or something's eating away, it shows on the pitch. So that's what happened that year. We've done our best, we brought it down to the last day. I remember thinking we've always had a chance because the group of players, we still had a lot of young lads who would have been so passionate about the club because we were there since we were kids, but it just wasn't meant to be. We got beat at Bolton, and it was one of the worst feelings I've ever had on a football pitch. The fans were unbelievable, came, stormed the pitch. I remember just being caught up in the emotion of it. It was just, terrible. It should never have happened, really.
Mm. And Venables was there before Gray. What kind of manager was he, like, considering he'd managed England and everything? Was it just, did it come to a point with him where he just said, I've had enough as well? Like, could you tell, sometimes a manager comes into a club and he's full of beans, he doesn't realise what's actually going on around him, and then if the manager's down every day, does it just kick in?
Yeah, it was exactly what you said. I think he came in and was breath of fresh air for a bit. I love training with him. He's so tactical. Our sessions before games, it was always, I learned so much around him. He was one of the best managers I've ever played for. And then, as you said, I'd say he just thought, all of a sudden got into board meetings and then realised what's going on here. I surely couldn't have dealt with it. The problems that he probably never seen before he took over, which is a shame because he's an unbelievable manager.
So Leeds go and you go to Barnsley. I know you had a few loan moves in between. Was Paul Hart the Barnsley manager?
Yeah, he was when I first went there.
When you went and loaned to Forest so you kind of knew what you were getting into. Would that be because Barnsley League One at the time, the equivalent, like, obviously I would think at my stage with your talent, I would think I'm better than League One. So did he have?
I had a few options to go to the Championship and stuff, but I just felt I needed to get under him again and just start.
What was so good about him?
He's just amazing man. Like, he's so hard to describe. Just everything about him since I went over at 15, I just ate his words. I think he connect with someone on a football side of things and off the pitch, disciplinarian, as I said, would hammer you at the right time, would give you a hug and tell you you're the best at the right time. So I just felt I needed that to get going again and to get under him and try and enjoy my football again, because I lost loads of respect probably for the game, because of what happened at Leeds and the way it went, and I was fighting the world in my own head.
Is it respect for the game or respect for just Leeds, because they've just gone from promising you everything to it just went then, you know what? Yeah. I mean, sometimes I can understand someone saying I've lost this. I don't understand respect for the game. Would you say love for the game?
Yeah, look, more I don't mean I don't disrespect the game, because you can never do that, but just that at that time I felt I was still young and I was fighting the world. I never looked at myself more than I used to look the other way. I think a lot of kids do, don't they? They don't point the finger at themselves. So looking back now, I wish I just was a bit more experienced to say, listen, you need to start working again. You need to start getting your head down. You need to start living properly. You need to
Barnsley would suggest to me you were, because a person who was blaming everyone else would have taken, no disrespect to Barnsley, a bigger club, and go, I'm better than this. But I think by going to Barnsley, you're saying to yourself, I had to do that.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I had to make that decision. But the year before, or the year leading up to that, probably just not. I wasn't at it in my head, and it's just I wasn't as fit as I should have been. All that sort of stuff was playing on my mind, and I knew I need to make a big change, and it was a massive decision, because it could have went pear shaped, really dropping down the league, especially the way I played. It's difficult. I had to scrap, I had to fight to try and get in games and try and get hold of the ball. So I loved it. I loved every minute going to Barnsley. It actually gave me so much more hunger, and I think that my character was sort of nailed on from then on, going forward for the rest of my career. Yeah.
So do you think that year previous to Barnsley really affected your career? Because I look at you and I go, I'd be shocked that I've seen 10 Irish caps. And I was geez, I thought I would have got a lot more. Yeah. And then I'm reading, Stephen Gerrard gives you a post saying, best luck in your retirement. I mean, he doesn't go out of his way for an average player. Do you know what I mean? So I'm thinking, I'm looking at you and saying, for a player who was so quality, do you think you could have done more?
I think every player, when they finish, think they could do more. I think it's just looking back, things did go against me, but I probably didn't nail myself at the right times. Massive moments in my career where I should have just got my head down. And as I said, that year or two before making that decision to go to Barnsley, looking back, I was probably flaky at the time, you know, mentally. And this frustrates me when looking back. But listen, I was lucky enough to play in a lot of big games and stuff, so I try and get over it with that, you know.
Would the 10 caps have as much to do with sort of Irish football's slight suspicion of the flair midfielder through some of that time kind of thing?
No, not really. I don't hold that as something that annoys me. No, I think it's, as I said, just the wrong time in terms of the players, Roy and all them that I used to sit on the bench and watch and never get on. But it was difficult. Yeah. I could never complain. I could never say, geez, they're bad, I should be playing. It was top players at the top of the game in the world. So it was timing, maybe I might have got a few more caps if it was a bit later on. But no, I don't. There's no excuses from me. No, it's just, would love to have more, but still appreciate what I've had as well.
You mentioned Roy there, kind of character, was he?
Yeah, I love Roy. I didn't have any issues with Roy. When I trained and played a few of my caps with him in midfield, I really enjoyed it. He was always straight with me. I had loads of battles with him on the pitch as well. We used to have some good tackles and get up and look at each other, and yeah, it was good. I never had a problem with Roy. I think he's, as you said, he's in the news with now from being down that neck of the woods. He's an unbelievable player and character, isn't he? You know. So.
Why do you think like people get wound up by him? So what is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, like,
did you see any players? You don't have to mention names or anything, but that you saw with the Irish team going, oh, he can't handle Roy. He's different breed now to Roy. Roy needs to stay away from him.
Yeah, like. I think there's obviously, you know, different characters that take things quite personal, don't they, in dressing rooms, and are a bit, I don't know, I wouldn't say soft, but you know, someone can get under their skin in the dressing room. You have them, but listen, I've been in so many dressing rooms and just got used to the banter and the sort of that bullying type of feel to it. So It's, I think, a lot of it rubbed off my back when that was said to me. I just sort of, yeah, sort of put it to one side and get on with it. So I can see how he can get at people because he's so demanding. He's so, but they're all the best players there.
When you're like going to Barnsley, so you're dropping two divisions. Was there ever a point you were, what did I leave myself in for here? Like, you go from playing United away to playing, like, one of my old clubs, Rochdale, they might have been in there. Like, that's some drop.
Yeah, no, was...
in terms of opposition, yeah, though, yeah, not, yeah. Like...
Yeah, no, I embraced it. I loved it. I think it was being around Paul again, and just the way he plays football, his vision of the game, everything was coming back to me. What it was like being back in the U team again.
Do you think, yeah,
I had a
like,
great year. Yeah.
When you're young, you like football more, I think, because it's not a job.
Yeah, yeah.
When you get older and pressure, it's a job and you'd start thinking, I have to support my family. Yeah. So he brought that
back to me. Yeah,
it
yeah.
actually was like, I just want to enjoy football again. Like,
exactly. And that's how it was. And I just enjoyed it. I just enjoyed the sessions. I couldn't get off the training ground. I was staying in the afternoons with a lot of young lads and doing stuff. And yeah, it just brought that freshness back. I was getting fitter and fitter, playing every second day. I was getting back to the levels where I was 3 or 4 years previous, where I felt invincible on the pitch in terms of fitness and strength and stuff. So all that sort of came back overnight. And yeah, I loved it. We ended up beating Swansea in the playoff final in the Millennium. That was my last game for Barnsley. So it was a great feeling, unbelievable feeling. All my family were over from Dublin, with 30 or 40 people there, Millennium Stadium, winning a final. It was a great feeling to get back, getting the buzz for the game again.
You mentioned that final. I only just found out a piece this morning about you. You met Cardiff the night before.
Yeah, I did, yeah. That was
so
mad.
Your head was fully on the game. How does that, like...
Yeah, I know, yeah.
How does that meeting come about, like...
Yeah, it was probably leading up to the playoffs. I think, I don't know, we beat... Might be wrong, but I'm nearly sure it was Huddersfield in the semi-final. And Dave Jones was the manager at Cardiff at the time, and... he got in contact. I was up. I'd know my contract was up. Barnsley did offer me a really good deal leading up to it. I got player of the year, so I was feeling a bit under pressure before that final to sign for Barnsley. But I just knew I needed a change from the area. You know, I was living in Leeds since I was 15, and my wife was pregnant. I just wanted to get away. I just wanted a fresh start and try and look elsewhere. And it was no disrespect to Barnsley because they were brilliant, but it was that week leading up to the final, Dave rang me a few times. Obviously, Cardiff, I was travelling down a couple of days before to prepare for the game. And he asked my agent, can we meet up? So I wasn't comfortable doing it, but I knew I needed to get in a room with him to see, because I needed to be a quick decision after the final. So I did. I went the night before, and I look back, like, terrible thing to do. A game the next day. Well, I spent an hour with Dave, and he just told me his plans for the club. And he sold the club to me. Sold me to the club, and yeah, I made my decision quite quick coming out of that realm, really.
Did that give you, like, less pressure on the final the next day? Because in one sense you'd like, oh, good send off, but in another sense you're like, either way I'm out of here. Like for me, you're like, you know, at some stage you do have to look after yourself.
Yeah, no doubt.
About that, and you go, either way I'm out of here tomorrow.
Yeah, but to be honest, I was so wrapped up because I was so wrapped up and playing well, and Swansea were flying at that stage, and like really good players, and I was just thinking, as you know, you just vision the night before going to bed of how you're going to play and all that sort of stuff. So I didn't overthink it. I did know it was my last game, I must admit, but I wanted to make sure I won the game. I felt like the group that I was involved in was tight, it felt special, and I was leading that because I was captain at stages in the season, and I just wanted to make sure I sent off on the right note and played well, you know. That was all in my head going to bed anyway.
Did you get your own rooms the night before? Because like you would have had to get your roommate to cover for you.
No, it was, I actually snuck off after the
meal.
After the meal.
Just a walk.
Yeah, just went for a walk. And that was it. I never told anyone. Yeah, so it was casual walk after dinner was the easy way out.
But like, did you decide there and then that night that like that's it, I'm done? Did you ring your wife?
No, I didn't speak to the wife about it. I just knew in my head it was the right move for me, if that makes sense. After like they were just so good on how they presented to me and how the club was going to look in 3 or 4 years, and I was going to be a part of that. So Dave was brilliant. Dave Jones was, just sold the club to me, really.
Did you feel like that you went to Barnsley to kind of get your love back for football, build up your career, and then you were like, right, I'm ready to go back now?
Yeah.
That kind of way with that Cardiff, and they were just like, I'm ready for this.
I was ready to leave Barnsley and start and grab a club again and get in a dressing room and try to make things happen, which is... That was always in my mind, going to Cardiff. That was a special area. I think if anyone's been there, it's a bit like home here. People are great, so tight. They're so, just love their club. It's just incredible fan base. One club, one city, huge city. So I went down and visited probably 2 or 3 days after the final when all the celebrations settled down. And I just knew straight away this is a place for me. I loved it.
You had success at Cardiff. You managed to captain them in the FA Cup final. What's the build up to that like? Because the FA Cup for me has changed the last couple of years, but at that stage.
At that stage, it was huge. It's huge. Like I probably like yourself, remember growing up and FA Cup final days, you're up watching TV at 9 o'clock, watching the two teams come out of the hotel, all that sort of stuff. So to get a chance to experience that, and the week, it was probably the month leading up to it, it's so intense, and everything's on. The whole week is media week leading up to it. It's constant suits, all that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's amazing to get a chance to lead a club out of that size, and such a big game was special. It goes so quick though, you know, the day sort of, I got flashbacks of on the coach, Dave Jones done what we done, the video.
That was good. That was, yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, the day of the cup final with Rovers, they like didn't tell any of the players, but they got all our family to just like record a video of each player, which is, I thought was unbelievable.
Yeah, that's from fair. Dave, yeah, I got that like, I said to the gaffer about what happened with us in the final. He thought, brilliant, we'll do that for Ireland. I think it was unbelievable. We were like, so we left central London to go to Wembley, got on the bus, really everyone up tense, everyone's wanting to get there, you're stuck in traffic, an hour and a half, it was what it was going to be, even though you have an escort, and then all of a sudden on the screens, on the bus, the families popped up, and it was half an hour of just takes that sort of pressure. You just see Michelle and the kids just there talking and how proud they are, and then all of a sudden you can't wait to get on the pitch. So it was
emotional.
Yeah, emotional, and then coming up Wembley Way, you see thousands and thousands of people. So I have flashbacks of things like that. The game sort of, I don't, it just sort of comes and goes, you know. I do remember the feeling at the end when, because I just picture myself going up them steps to try and pick it up, but that's a heartbreaking side of things, of losing the final. But yeah, special day. If you could ever,
it's imagine when you're captain.
You feel like that, that would have been really, really special. But listen, growing up and you get a chance to captain a team in the FA Cup final, bite your hand off, so it was great.
Not many Irish lads have done that, like, are they? Six or seven, maybe?
I honestly don't know, but yeah, it was a great day. It was great lead up to it. It's a special game, obviously.
I remember watching it at the time, and he's been prone to a few mistakes, but surely, like,
he's got it off me
in the dressing room. Like, if a fella makes a mistake in a normal league game, you're kind of like, all right.
Yeah.
A cup final, Peter Enkelman, come on, like,
yeah,
how much chances does this guy get?
I know, I think the year or two before, wasn't it? Villa, you let that ball go through his leg, under his foot, wasn't it? It's difficult. We let him know. I remember. I remember that night we went into town and we had a few drinks, obviously. And I remember giving him a bit in jest, obviously, because you don't want to kill him too much. But yeah, it was heartbreaking. Wait to lose it.
If I make a mistake in the game, I'm like, oh my God. But I, before, lads, to be honest. That's terrible.
And that's the thing with keepers, isn't it? It's so much spotlight on the keeper, isn't it? You know?
And then you had the League Cup final, but you weren't involved in that.
No, I played all the games. I captained the four games before leading up to that, and then I got ill, so I had to go to America to get some treatment, and I came back 10 days before the final, and I trained and I wasn't right. So on the Monday before the final, Malcolm McCoy called me in and said, "How are you feeling? You ready to go?" And I told him I wasn't fit to play, so big decision, but I probably could have played, but I wasn't at my best, so I needed to make the right call for the team, really, you know.
It's Sjogren's syndrome, yeah, is it? How does your life just switch when you get news like that?
Yeah, it was strange, really, because the year I got ill, I was 29, and I was flying. I played 56 games I started that year. It was the fittest I've ever been. Not missed a minute the whole season, nearly. And all of a sudden, I found a lump just under me jawline, you know. And it was only small, tiny, like a pea. And I said it to the doc, and it was sort of him and on. And I think it's just an infection. I had antibiotics, never cleared, never went away. It wasn't sore, and so wasn't too bothered. So he brought me to see a specialist, and we had an international break coming up, so he said, "We've a 2-week break. I'll take it out, you know, just no harm. Just, you won't miss a game, you won't miss too much training, you might miss a week's training, but you'll be fine for the next game." So we took it out, I didn't miss a game, but they did tell me when I came out of recovery that it was a lot bigger, it was growing, it was back going the opposite way, so that's why you couldn't feel it. But nothing to be worried about, stitched me back up, played away, and then probably about 2-3 weeks later I had a follow-up appointment and they told me it was a lymphoma, so sort of, yeah, the whole world sort of stops then in the meeting room. But honestly, I just sort of just asked, what do I need to do, what treatment do I need, let's do it, let's crack on. So I had my treatment. Lucky enough, I was sent back home. Cardiff were brilliant. They sent me back home for my treatment in the matter and let me be around the family. So I had like eight weeks back home, having gone for my treatment every day. And I was actually training with Tony McCarthy at the time, just to keep fit through it as well. So it was ironic that Macca's here at Rovers. So yeah, no, listen, it was a tough time, but I just was so determined that it was not going to stop me, that I wanted to be back in the pitch as quick as possible. And
did you feel that when you went back into the dressing room, lads treated you different?
Not so much. I went back in the middle of my treatment. to watch a game and say hello just for a weekend before I knew, because I knew the longer I get I wouldn't be too well. So the first 4 or 5 weeks I was fine, I didn't feel any different, but then towards the end of the treatment I was getting ill, quite ill. But obviously people just rooting for you, messages, all the fans, the players were unbelievable. The fans sung my name every game. It was just things, little things just keep you going. And even though you're not there, you felt like you were watching results. Soccer Saturday, I was watching, how are they getting on? I was ringing the lads after. So you do feel a part of it, and they were unbelievable. I mean, the whole club was scarily good. I just wanted to get back in the pitch. So I was lucky enough within, I think it was 4 months, I was back playing, so I was feel quite blessed that it sort of passed. Yeah. And obviously now I learned at the time I had an autoimmune disease that I still have. That's it's incurable, but something I have to live with every day. So I can deal with that now. I'm totally on track with it all. I have ups and downs, as you know. So it was. Just trying to stay on top of it now as best I can, and just one you got to crack on with.
Were they related, Stephen? The lymphoma
I had was related to the syndrome at the time, but it takes quite a long time to diagnose the autoimmune disease because they need to go through the process. So they are linked, and that's how I found out really. So I had quite a number of years after the lymphoma where I was breaking down all the time, getting sick, and then I'd bounce back and play, and then I'd break down again. So they were trying to figure it all out. It was quite complicated. Until I went to LA and I met the top surgeon in that field, and he put me on a bit of treatment that I still have today. So I was lucky enough to get to yeah, it was true. It was a mad story. It was true. Venus Williams, the tennis player. Mm. Yeah. So I read at the time that she had the same autoimmune disease. So I just said to my agent said, well, try and get in contact with her, you know, see what she's doing. She's playing. She seems to be living an athlete's life. Like, so let's see what she's doing. So he did. He got in contact with her agent. And one day she rang the house, my house in Cardiff, and I spoke to her for 2.5 hours on the phone.
Really?
Yeah, she was unbelievable, unreal. Like, it was surreal. I just sat there in the kitchen speaking to Venus Williams about everything and everything. Yeah, so it was...
How long at the time had she known?
She'd just been diagnosed as well, within a year and a half or something, so she was going through it. So she just had little tips on diet and stuff, and she spoke to her. She said she used to love drinking pints of Guinness. I was like, all right. she said I had to cut the amount of pints of Guinness, but we were laughing. Yeah. But she was brilliant. She was absolutely like top drawer. Just so honest. Stayed in contact with her a bit. Obviously a huge superstar, so I wasn't annoying her, but it was. No, it was great to be able to pick someone's brains that was in my position as an athlete trying to live with something like that. So yeah, it helped a lot.
Like we mentioned about, could you have had more caps? Like, I mean, obviously that's a factor as well. Yeah. Was there a Stephen McPhail before and after that was slightly different, or did you get back to?
No. To be honest, I didn't get back to. I played probably 100 games in my career after that from 30. So. I never felt bang at it all the time, or I would be for a certain amount of time, then I'd break down again. So it was bang in me prime, which is frustrating. If it had been a bit later, you would have took it. But yeah, listen, I'm just happy to be still here, and because when you're going through the treatment and you're sat beside kids that are sick and ill, and just gives you a whole perspective of what's going on, and it's heartbreaking seeing the treatment centres and where you have to be for that time, and people that are really, really struggling, you know.
And you had your own first child probably at that stage?
I did. I just had my second child months before I found out I had the lump, so I don't know how my wife Cope, she was a huge rock. She's amazing how she got through it. I always looked at her more than myself then, because she's you just go into auto drive and just crack on through it, you know.
Did you, like, do you know that Venus Williams now? Did you feel like at the time, surely something must have went in your head, I'll have to finish soccer? Did she ever, like, go, if I can do this, you can do it?
Yeah, she did. She talked about that. She spoke about trying to keep it real, trying not give up. That was a huge part of her talk to me, because I had times where I thought, I can't get out of bed here. And if they go training, I've just felt fatigued, joint ache. And she was telling me the exact same story. Yeah. So I was like, thank God someone was going through that. I'd no one to speak to about. So, and she told me, just go and see this specialist. You need to go and see him. I'll book it. I'll do it. And within 3 days,
she did all
she'd
that,
done it. Yeah, she'd done it. So I went. I was over there. She gave me his name. Set up the appointment. And I spent 4 days with him. And he just said, this is the treatment I need. You'll be fine. And it did. It helps me all the time to recover now when I have a flare up. Her chat was really, don't lie down to this. You'll be fine. Try this, try that. You know. So it was, she was really, really positive of trying to keep a normal life as best you can.
Back to your Cardiff days, you probably played with some good players, but one player that'll probably stand out to a lot of players now was Aaron Ramsey.
Mm.
What was he like coming through? Because he was linked with Everton and United before Arsenal. Yeah. Did you just think this kid's special?
Ah, yeah, he was unbelievable. He trained with us when he was 15, and you just knew he was going to be a star. You had that sort of shyness, quiet type character off the pitch, but as soon as he stepped on the pitch, it was just like, give me the ball. So laid back, so confident, so just ready for football life. Anything that was thrown at him at a young age, he was fine and dealt with, and you knew he was going to be a star.
He was coming into your position.
Yeah, he was coming into my position. And he only got his debut, to be fair. They tell you, when I got suspended in the FA Cup, I missed the FA Cup game. And he started and scored, and I thought, here we go.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to get back in. But so it was. He owes me one for starting him off, I suppose. No, he's a great lad as well. He was so down to earth, real Welsh speaker as well. Kept his heritage and his roots. He loved everything about Cardiff as well, playing for Cardiff, being from the area. When you play with good players, you know they can handle themselves in any situation. On the pitches, and he had that, and I knew he wouldn't be with us too long. And obviously he wasn't. I think he might have only played 30 games for Cardiff, maybe less. And all the scouts were at every game. We all knew that was all speculation in the papers. And obviously he went to met Arsenal, and he went to Arsenal, and he's still going today. Obviously big clubs.
We'll touch a bit there and know your international career. You made your debut against Scotland on the Mick McCarthy. I've actually met Mick myself. I thought, great guy to be around, like, great personality. What kind of environment did he create when you were in the Irish team?
He was brilliant. He was spot on at everything he'd done, Mick. He was a great manager, but he pulled the group together. Great, like, we'd have great bonding sessions out and about. And he just understood it. He just understood.
Bonding's drinking.
Drinking. There's nothing much more to that. But he would, even the young Viol games and stuff, the banter, the making lads sing, all that, he just brought a real proper leader without being just a normal man who treated everyone properly, I think, you know, and so much respect for Mick. Even now, I mean, he's just proper bloke, and you can see how well he does in every job he goes into.
Because, like, I can imagine going away international duty, it must be tedious, like, just sitting in a hotel. Like, did you actually enjoy it? Because I think some players lie. I, like, played, what was it, 23s, like, League of Ireland thing, which is nothing, really, it's crap. It was like 5 days away, and I was like, I hate every minute of this.
Yeah, it's not.
Like, do international players ever complain and go, this is terrible.
Like. Yeah, I think it's the environment you're in. Like we used to do all sorts. We used to even going out golfing and stuff. We all went out together and made it competition and just stuff. As you said, you can get sit in a realm and be bored, but we never seemed to do that. A lot of us would have grew up playing as well, like Sir Richie and Robbie and all my age. So we were all quite close in that sense that we knew each other a long time. So you would try and get out and not just sit in your realm. It's difficult, isn't it? You know yourself, you can get depressed very easily if you're away.
Go for like secret walks and
secret walks. Yeah, cups of coffee. There was no coffee back then, but whatever we were putting into the drink.
You're not making me feel sorry for you here with your international breaks, lads. Come on.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't something to be feel sorry for. Now I loved it. I did love going away with Ireland. I never shied away from meeting up with the lads. It was a great place to be as well. We always, as you said, have a drink and a sing song and. He made that quite special as well.
Yeah, I remember hearing Stephen Elliott talk about that they made him go out the night before training. He was only making his debut or something. He spewed up in training the next day. Like he was wondering how lads are doing, and I was like, did you ever get that? Like,
I never spewed. No, I might have kept it in a few times, but.
But would lads literally the day before training?
Come oh yeah, 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 yeah. As soon as we meet up, we'd be out. Everyone would be out and we'd train the next day and they'd be, yeah, it wouldn't be great, but I think Mick knew, but he knew that was part and parcel of being Irish and being together, and we needed that camaraderie, and it was very close.
Successful though.
Yeah, he is. Like. He'll always be Mick because he's real, and that's so important to players. I think players see through stuff quite easily, especially now. So I think it's been honest and real, and Mick's always been that.
He's definitely one, just from looking at the outside, he looks like a player's manager, because I think even the incident with Keo, he stood up for him straight away. And I think that gets a lot of respect for lads in the dressing room, because some managers would throw a player under the bus and then you just go, that's it. Like,
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that, as you said, that's huge. Like, once you know, and Mick would go through you. I remember him going through me for not making a tackle in one of the games in the far corner in Lansdowne Road. I'll never forget it. And I thought, I did actually try and make that sort of ricochet off me. But he went through me at half time in front of everyone. I thought, I've let him down there. But I never felt it was going to come out of the dressing room.
Yeah.
And it didn't. And that's just the respect he had. That's what it was about at the time. I thought, I've let him down, you know, and that's something that was that's evidence.
Because
a
lot of managers would kind of sneakily drop that in with Tony Dunhu afterwards or something like that, you know, whereas McPhail could have done better on the first goal.
Never
or whatever,
did.
Yeah.
He hammered me in front of everyone. And it wasn't a hammering, it was, you should have nailed him. And I was half wanting to say, I did try to sort of ricochet, but I didn't.
Have you ever seen a lad go back at him like?
No, I can't remember. Anyway, he does it like every good manager, in the right way, the right frame, like not disrespecting, not calling you, you're this, you're that. It was, no, you should have done this. You didn't bum bum. It was hard, firm, at a level pitch that you could, you see. Mm. And then, come out of the dressing room, spoke to the press, and never mentioned my tackle that. Probably cost us the goal. Like, you know.
So you take it on the chin then?
Yeah, definitely. And you learn from it as well. Mm-hmm. I threw myself into every tackle after that. I wouldn't have done that again. But that's how he manages, and that's how he gets respect of every player. I don't think I've ever heard anyone that's played underneath him have a bad word to say about him, because that's how he treated everyone.
Mm. You came back then, played League of Ireland, finished with Rovers. Was that always an idea when you were going over that I will finish up in Ireland or move back to Ireland?
No, I never was. I loved Rovers as a kid. I followed them since I was a baby, all around the country. So, but I never had it in my mind when I was over there, I want to play for Rovers. I want to do it. But the longer my career went on, and when I got to, I think it was 34 when I came home. I just, start getting the bug for wanting to finish it out. and always wanted to play for Rovers because that's the team I supported as a kid. So yeah, amazing the way to finish really, because that was where it all started for me.
And is your wife Irish?
Yeah.
So it was an easier transition to come home, because I know lads from Ireland in England, their wife's English, and then they're like, well, I'm not coming back to you, so it's very difficult. So it was always the plan, we will go home eventually.
And listen, it's a tough one, because my wife moved over when she was 18, so she'd been away as long as I had, so she was never longing to get back to Dublin, and I wasn't, because we were away so long, and you just get used to being a flight away. So it wasn't our plan, but the longer it went on, and as you say, football changes quick. I signed for Sheffield Wednesday when I was 34, and it was only a year's contract, and we didn't want to move from Cardiff to Sheffield, the kids into school, and so they moved back to Dublin. So that was probably...
While you were at Sheffield?
While I was at Sheffield.
How difficult is that?
That sort of put
you
the nail.
You don't enjoy it then? Like,
yeah, that put the nail in the coffin for me. I'd done it for about 6-7 months where I was travelling from Dublin to Sheffield, and I lost.
It's kind of like a case then of just going, I'm looking only forward to going home all the time. It's never actually football then, and then it's just like football becomes a burden rather than an actual enjoyment.
Exactly, and that's how it felt. It was, I did enjoy playing for that club, but it was just, I was knackered. Like I was leaving on a Tuesday, I made a Wednesday off, and coming back Wednesday night. I was leaving on a Saturday, traveling. It's just a nightmare, and I was missing the kids. The kids were FaceTime, and just it's not the same, is it? So it's that was hard. So I quickly made my decision after 6-7 months that I asked them could I go home, and they were fine. They were great.
You probably saw that, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You can see. I think anyone could tell that.
Like, yeah, you're broken when you're away from the family, and you're just not enjoying it.
It's different for a young lad. Yeah. Like, I still have my career to keep going. Where, like you said, you're at 34. You're like, I'm coming to an end. Is it worth prolonging something when I'm not enjoying it? Really?
Exactly. Like, yeah. So that was the decision, and came home and met Rovers, and I was delighted to have a couple of years to finish off, which was great. Trying to fit back into living at home after being so long.
Yeah. Did you go from, like in England, would you have been noticed in the street everywhere you went down?
No.
But Ireland surely would be different. Would
No. I've never. No, I wouldn't. I'd never. Like, I live in a small town, north side of Dublin. So in that small town, it's full of farmers. My best mate's a farmer. They don't care too much about overly giving you any praise. So, no, I've led a normal life. I never get stopped. I've never done that.
You didn't grow the beard as a disguise.
I didn't. Yeah. But I just settled back in within a month or two. Felt like I was never away. All my mates were back. I was going, seeing them every week that I could never do before. So. I was happy the kids were back around their cousins. They grew up overnight. You don't realise how sheltered they are in England when it's just me and Michelle looking after them and no one else, because we've got no one else. And now all of a sudden they're staying in their nannies and granddads for 2 nights and you don't see them, and they're coming back giving you grief and cursing and everything that's real about growing up in Ireland. So it's that was a great decision. It's something that we're delighted with. Michelle's back working in her old school. She's in an Irish school. She's back Irish speaking every day. So she's happy. She's delighted to be back around her family as well. So it's settled back into it quite quick, which is lucky. I feel blessed then, really, you know.
And now director of football /coach at Rovers. And how are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's different. You know, like, come to the end. And I spoke to John and Roach, the chairman. Asked was I going to go another year, and I said no. I'm goosed here. I'm 37. My legs are gone. And he just said, listen, I think we're going to change the football side of things at the club. Would you be interested in this role, sporting director? And I said, John, I don't even know what that is. So I said, leave it with me 2-3 weeks. I went and had a look, studied it, sort of went and met a few sporting directors that I knew, and thought, right, yeah, I fancy to try it, stay in the game, try and keep fresh, not have too much time off. So I had a couple of weeks off, and I was straight back into working with Stephen Bradley now, who's head coach, and enjoying being around him and trying to help him as much as possible, because that's how I feel they're all should be. I should be just a constant help to him and try and support him as best I can.
That's brilliant, Macca. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, lads.
Really enjoyed it.